Hello, and welcome to Mondays on Tuesdays podcast. I had a very interesting few weeks, and I don't know. So the people I know that are more spiritual say that like everything happens for a reason, and oh man, it doesn't always seem like that's the case. And I really feel like we as American society members tend to blame individuals and ignore circumstances. And I really believe it's the combination of those two things. And so while I can accept in a sort of universal spiritual sense that everything happens for a reason and everything has its own time, I also think that even if that were true, we're such a, collective world where maybe things are not my timing, maybe they are, maybe there's like a serendipitous luck layer that I can't understand, but navigating a situation where the job market is so nasty and it's kind of like, what do I do? I think there's been a lot of personal blame on my end of how do I become this like super amazing, productive person? And what I've actually realized is that the solution to modern society is how you plug into it absolutely as much as who you are and what you're capable of. And I like to think of the economy as like an electrical grid. And like, if you're not plugged into an outlet, it doesn't matter how fantastic you are. And this was really an eye-opening experience to realize that, I can write software in really interesting ways. And, as a solopreneur, it gets really hard to connect it to an income stream. Whereas I can get better at line cooking. And for every bit that I get better at line cooking, my career opportunities really broaden compared to writing better software. I got the memory manager in Seneca to click, and it's just such an amazing way. It's wonderful. I was telling a friend of mine recently that the memory manager is printing out that it's managing things in kilobytes, and nobody thinks in kilobytes anymore. They think in, megabytes, gigabytes, terabytes. And the fact that I got this thing efficient at the kilobyte scale is just so inspiring and interesting to me. And it's really going back to the like physicality of computers in terms of what they really can and can't do as like pattern of pattern machines. And I do feel like the languages we've been using them and the way we've been thinking about software kind of in a way betrays the physicality of computing, because computing is really just patterns of patterns. And when you look at how, the process is loaded into memory, and then you end up with the stack frames that essentially hold the state of where you are and the stack pointer and the computation options, assembly always has been a better representation of computing than the languages that came after that. And the problem there is that assembly is incredibly hard to write, and I know this because I've tried. And so humans have a need for convenience and a need for things to work within the time frame that you have, and that's very real. And that's why I think Seneca will end up as essentially more visual scripting as an interface than programming. And I'm very excited about what's happening with Seneca, even though the registration, the corporate with Iowa is collapsing and the credit card gateway is collapsing, even though I've never had anything to sell. So what's really collapsing is that I shouldn't have done that. And after the break, I'm going to talk about some conspiracies. And the reason I'm doing this is because I've met a lot of people who are just questioning the very fabric of existence and, what's true, what's not true. And the two conspiracies that I'm talking about is our data centers bunkers, and this is just the beginning of a military takeover. I've concluded they're probably not, and I'll talk about what my, evidence points are there. And it's a speculative podcast, and I hope this one helped people sort of air out certain things and come back to an idea that, the meaning of life has been the same through all human history. And the other conspiracy that I'm going to talk about, interestingly, is what really is the root of the social, political, and economic problems we have? Is it, like the move from the movie Wall Street, greed is good and we should all just kind of get on board? Or is greed not actually the root of problems? And is it mostly just that, when human self-esteem collapses, it causes the same sort of territorialness in every way? And I'll try and connect everything I see happening down to that root. And I hope it's optimistic in a sort of cynical way. So back after the break. All right, so I think we're just experiencing this amazing moment in time where we're looking back at American history with, I wouldn't say fresh eyes, but more determination than we've had. I mean, for the last few election cycles, I just haven't really paid attention, and I think a lot of us are in this position of, oh wow, we should have paid more attention. And I think in that shattering of realizing that there are absolutely authoritarian, horrible aspects to the sort of economic management layer of our time, a lot of us are wondering, how do we get here? What do we do? And how bad is it going to get? And I became very suspicious of the data center constructions when I saw how big they are and how much electricity they're looking for. And then when I saw their water consumption, because I was thinking, like, is this actually for computers? Or is it just that the technocrats want to take a shower and they want to grow food and they're planning to just wait out the apocalypse in, a bunch of, bunkers in Midwestern cities? And the main point of contemplation there is, like, cars have used closed loop cooling in terms of there's a liquid that gets circulated, but you never have to refresh the liquid since the beginning of time. I mean, think of how many times you change the coolant in your car. It's not like it's not like, uh-oh, I, drove 100 miles, gotta, refill my coolant, because that coolant is circulating between the front of the car where the air comes in and the engine to cool it down. And closed loop cooling in computers works exactly the same way. I've always used, AIOs in my computers that, pipe the water through right over the CPU into, a radiator on the front of the computer so that it can, cool with using, thermodynamics and that kind of thing. And so when I found out these water consumptions, I was like, wait a minute, is this a grow house or is this a data center? And that's disturbing to think about. I mean, you look at what ICE has been doing, you look at, the things the government has been saying, and it's not hard to imagine that they would want to build data centers. I mean, there's a lot of reports of technocrats building bunkers in New Zealand and, places like that. And it's just, when you think this way about, like, oh my God, the world is out to get me, it gets really, really upsetting. And the reason I've let this idea go is a few things. One, I have accepted that the business world is actually dumb enough to think that compute power is the deciding factor in quality software. And when I think of quality software, it's usually been well-crafted decisions that funnel your process and what you're trying to solve down to a simplistic way. And if you try and just do that with raw compute, you end up guessing and guessing wrong. So it doesn't actually make sense. It's kind of like if you have a really powerful rocket engine, can you shoot it up in space to where you need it to be if you can't aim it? And aiming it is the human programming side, and the rocket ship engine is AI. And so it's not the powerful rocket engine that you need, it's the targeting of, getting exactly, to the moon. And that's where I was suspicious. I was like, are they actually dumb enough to believe that compute power matters? And I think they are, sadly. I think they are. But there was a product from OpenAI that was shelved, partly in attributed to some protests that shut down some data centers. And then there's also been a number of pieces of information I have, because they are building a data center quite close to me. And I know the real estate broker that's leased all the apartments or some of them. And she was talking about the type of people that are coming to build the data centers. And it really does look like this is actual data center construction. And then the other thing is that all of the new data centers supposedly are using closed loop water. So it looks a lot more like the conspiracy theory that the water consumption was because these are bunkers comes down to the oddly common process of technology companies starting with one approach that doesn't really make sense in terms of effectiveness and efficiency, and then scaling back to something else. So it seems like they have received the rallying cry from communities that says, do not take our water, do not take our electricity. And so they're scaling back into, okay, fine, we'll do the actual work of coming up with a reasonably sustainable solution and use the closed loop cooling that we always should have if we actually thought through the process. And it's like, I don't know if the like boiling water version was just like cheap and lazy or what it was, but it's just wild how a group of people being ineffective can spark so much terrifying concern. And so I now at this point do believe they are actually data centers, and the sort of business world at large is dumb enough to think that they just want them first, right? It's like that whole get in on the ground floor mindset of, hey, you know, data centers are going to exist, and we got to be the ones to have them first. You know, I think that's more or less what's going on. And then, you know, people have said, oh, you know, business is corrupt and they're shedding employees because profits. And I think a lot of people are having the experience of the modern workplace that there is a lot of money being left on the table. From systems I used to work for, where there was broad consensus among the engineers that we should slow down the number of features we were building and address some structural team dynamic communication issues and get to a place where we as a company had a really clear picture of what we were building, how and why, and the variable components we would actually need to be really good at to then quickly scale various configurations of these and build really fast and really deep and really powerful, and get to a place where the company really had transformative value. And when we propose that kind of thing to the people above us, the business leaders up to the C-suite, and then sort of the project managers up to the C-suite, and then up to the investors, there was such a lack of interest in not just maintenance, because that's considered like funding a cost center instead of, you know, a profit generating effort, but just in terms of this idea that things are good enough, we don't want to consider risk or rock the boat, that I've come to realize that it's not actually maximizing profits that is the root of the sort of stagnation and corruption. It's actually just an extreme desire for convenience, extreme lack of imagination. And it kind of comes down to this idea that money is being left on the table because it's convenient to do it. And that means that I don't think greed is the root of what's actually going on. I think what's going on is that humans have a tendency to fear an equal comparison, meaning very few people are vulnerable of like, here I am, judge me, let me know what's wrong. I just want to make things better, right? Until a crisis comes. So until there are so many tickets in the restaurant that you just have to get out of the shit because things are piling up. You have to get things done. That's when people start having conversations about, hey, why don't we do this differently? Right? And before that, when the kitchen can function appropriately and can manage the workload that comes in, if I were to say, hey, why don't we do this differently? The cost of thinking about doing something differently and the potential risks of doing something differently totally skew the conversation to that's not convenient, let's not talk about it, even if that's leaving money on the table, and we could be delivering better food faster, and that could grow the business. That excitement to grow the business seems to be way below the ownership level. And that's been true of software companies and restaurants I've been in. So I don't think greed and the desire for money is actually driving things. I think it's actually the sort of self-esteem collapse of I don't want to compete fairly. I wake up in the morning wanting an advantage because I believe that if all things were equal and people were allowed to start businesses and the distribution lanes weren't jammed up and the funding process wasn't jammed up, then I would lose my institutional wealth as a rich person. And so it's more important to own things in territory and obsess about things like market share. And it's more important to make sure that social programs are not funded, so that people struggle to get by, so that they don't have time to use their creativity to form actual quality products. And because those quality products in a fair competitive situation would challenge the institutional wealth. And the part of me that's interesting about that is that it actually makes the world a lot less complex, right? The reason why things are collapsing economically and socially is the same reason why some people are assholes. It's that same. I'm afraid of my own vulnerability. I'm afraid of my own shadow. And I would say this, I think there's a way out of this, and I think it's very slow. I think that fewer and fewer young people are being raised with the rose-colored lens of what corporate life is like. And there will be people who, instead of spending their energy climbing the corporate ladder, are going to spend their energy making sure they have job options available to them so that they can leave the moment the company they work for does something morally or ethically wrong, or there's no interest in providing the supplies or the strategies or greenlighting the projects that will allow them to do a better job. And I think what we're going to see is a workforce that is much less tolerant of poorly run companies. And that looks terrifying at a glance when you think of the way, Wall Street is so connected and a decrease in consumers is really scary. But over time, this shifts towards companies that don't use transformative value to provide wealth don't get staff. I think the resource that is going to be most fought over is not funding, it's going to be staff. And that sounds strange because everyone is out of work right now and there's so many layoffs. But if you look 10, 20, 30, 50, 100, 200, 300 years in the future, if staff really was the resource where unimaginative business leaders just lost their people, then what would essentially happen is that you wouldn't even have like unionized strikes. You would just have your most talented people walking out the door, and they don't even have to organize to do this. And over time, it would form a competitive economy that I think would be wonderful because I think people enjoy doing a good job. I think most of the stress of work is that it feels like fighting with your hand tied behind your back because you have to do a good job in an unimaginative environment based on convenience, where if you need something that makes sense to you because you're on the ground level of the company looking at what you actually need, you want to spend a few extra hours here, you want to have a few extra resources here, a few extra ingredients there, time to work on the system here, and you can say, hey, for every dollar that we put into this activity, we can get three more out of it. If we don't do this, our, revenue to expense margin of 1.1 becomes 1.01. And eventually we start losing money. And right now, when you start losing money as a company, the conversation is like, huh, but if you can grow into this market and form this dominance, maybe you're worth keeping afloat. And huh, if you have this license and this intellectual property, you're worth keeping afloat. And so there's these doorways of basically funding failed companies and keeping them alive in the like too big to fail model. And in an environment where people spend their time making sure they have options so that they can work for a company of their choosing, and that is more important than climbing the ladder or building the resume, you end up in a situation where companies are far more beholden to doing a good job, which is satisfying as someone who works there, and providing quality services, which is much more effective for people who buy and consume the products. And I think that's actually how this thing changes course. And sadly, I don't expect anything to happen quickly. I think this is a, a gradual process that probably didn't start when, jackasses took over the American government. It probably started, 15 years ago when I started hearing people saying they don't want to be management because management does dumb things. I think that was actually the real beginning of this shift. And the other thing that I want to touch on here, I had it in my head and it escaped for a minute, so it'll either come back or I'll end the episode. I remember what it was now. It's this concept of competition and a competitive market generally is viewed as part of capitalism. And capitalism is debated. Some people love it, some people hate it. And usually what I find in conversations about capitalism is it's kind of like something I believe I've touched on before is the concept of blurry words, meaning good means what? Even in the context of something like ice cream or pasta, my interpretation of good pasta is the pasta I had at one of my favorite restaurants in New York, which was like a salmon cream sauce pasta, right? Amazing. Now, some people don't think of fish and pasta together, especially in Italian food. To them, it's spaghetti and meatballs or whatever the vegetable one is with like cream sauce or even just an olive oil sauce. So good pasta even means something different to different people. And so when you say capitalism, it means something way different to everybody. And I define capitalism as the idea that capital is king. And I say capital is king, not in a gender neutral sense, because let's be honest, capitalism is male dominated. And to me, that means that capital means everything. So it's not I'm right. It's not I can run this business better. It's not I've demonstrated that I have any reasonable qualification to make decisions. I just have a bigger bank account. I just have more capital, and I'm going to make a dumb decision. And that's capitalism. And competition gets looped in there of, oh, it's a marketplace. It's a free marketplace. It's a competitive marketplace. But competition, which I define very differently than combat. Combat is when you're out to destroy something. Capitalism, competition is when you're competing. Think of a sports game, right? The sports game has very specific rules so that it inspires innovation within the strategy of the sport. So the first thing would be like, what if you had, a soccer team that rather than learning how to pass and coordinate how they move towards the ball down towards the goal through the team, what if they just went around and like knocked everybody over and like broke everybody's legs of the, who was a superstar and the other player? This would not be good for the sport, right? Because the sport is exciting because you see innovations within a finite space. There are restrictions also to make it safe. I played roller derby for 2 seasons. And they have very specific laws about where you can hit people, specifically in the back. And this is both strategic, because if you're the jammer going up against the blockers and you can just push them over, it's no fun to watch. If you have to go around them because you're only allowed to hit them on the sides, and they can use that displaying of a space you're not allowed to hit strategically, it becomes a much more interesting sport. And the world of commercial business is similar in that if you can scam clients out of money, it's not really going to create valuable products and services. And so we definitely need business regulation, no question about that. And the other thing to really understand is that if you are a capitalist in the sense that you would like to use your bank account to, have decisions and beat people over the head and then just always have leverage, you fundamentally don't want competition, because competition allows someone with a smaller bank account to release a better product than yours. And someone with a smaller bank account to capture the hearts and minds of customers that you would want. And even if it happens at a small scale, it's really insulting. I mean, if you're a dominant player in the market, you own like 60% of the market. But the word on the street is that somebody who only owns 3% is the actual luxury, right? And they sell at a lower price point, and it's like, ooh, they sell out, and I can't wait to get them. That's really, really insulting as a business owner to be like, I'm just big, but I'm not good. And so competition is actually anti-capitalism in a way. Competition is actually the other side of the spectrum of institutional advantageous wealth. I've said before, and I think this really is true, that if you look back to the great innovations of American society over the last like 50, 100 years, a lot of it's in the telecom industry. And you could say the internet, cell phones, it's all sort of telecom industry related. And the last really famous breakup of a company in America was AT&T Bell. And so, to me, the really sad narrative of America losing its edge in really regulating competition is that when I look at the real wealth we have delivered to the country, to the country and the world, it ended when we stopped breaking companies up. And this is a really hard thing to sit with as someone who wants to invent things and would like credit for the things that I invent. This idea of, well, hey, if I built it and I own it, then I don't want someone to just break it up just because it worked. But the reality is, it's not mine when it's a team of like 1,000 people, and it's not mine when it serves a bunch of people. Almost like, is wonderful music from the 80s owned by the record company who owns it or the person who made it? Or is it owned by everyone who now has it in their hearts and mind and has experiences with it and has memories from it? Like, how do we really define ownership? Is it just the person who was first and has their name on it, or is it what it actually matters to the people who it is now a part of their life and their memories forever? And so I think that thinking about capitalism and anti-capitalism doesn't involve thinking about money or anti-money, and thinking about competition and fairness and like, market business and business things doesn't have to be an endorsement of, let's all get on top of the world with wealth and ownership and bank accounts so that we can, do whatever we want. Because I think that the fundamentals of business are the same and will stay the same, which is transformative value that takes raw ingredients or unused ideas and transforms them into so much more that there's enough money to pay staff for their contributions, and make something out of human effort. And I think human effort is the most satisfying when it accomplishes something. And I think the rottenness of the business world and the employment space is basically that it's just hard to accomplish things these days. And again, I would give that the lens that I definitely have made the mistake of working on my personal skills and abilities far more than working on finding a place to connect those skills and abilities. And so, I started the main section of the podcast debunking that I don't think the data centers are actually bunkers. I think they're data centers, which is ridiculously overstating the value of compute power. And I don't think that business is corrupted because of greed. I think it's corrupted because of paranoia, jealousy, and the same sort of, human psychology things that make everything collapse. And both of these things are sort of wonderful and terrifying at the same time, because it's wonderful to think that I don't really believe that the military-industrial complex is as entrenched in taking over as it may seem. But it's terrifying to think that business owners are actually dumb enough to think that AI works in the way they think it does. And then it's wonderful to think that, greed and the constant need for money is not the thing driving the corruption of our time. It's actually just extremely paranoid, jealous people who have been, high on extreme wealth. But it's also terrifying to think that a business working functionally does not resonate with them. And so when you, as an employee of a company, say, hey, if we did a little bit extra here, we could make a lot more money and make a lot of people happier. When that gets denied, it's scary because we've kind of left the lens of a functional business as the healing elixir for our time. But it also means that returning to the idea that a functional business is the healing elixir for our time is also true. So doing a good job, figuring out how to read, the red flags in your coworkers and the owners of your business, and diversifying the employment options that you have to allow you to really choose where you work. This means that business and work isn't dead, even though, my God, is it confusing. Anyway, I hope the rambly nature of this episode lands in a positive way. As I've said before, I'm known for giving not so peppy pep talks where you may be more depressed by the end than inspired, but I, for one, am inspired. I'm still kicking. I've been through a bunch of stuff. So stay safe, stay happy, stay excited, stay passionate. And I will record another one of these really soon.